5 years ago, I believed you had to be a jack of all trades if you wanted to be successful. You had to understand all the individual pieces of the widget, right? You had to know everything about something and something about everything. Mm-hmm. And I still think that's fine. Today, given the advancements in technology, given the efficiencies that have now been created through AI, which have reduced, you know, engineer and legal workforces for the better or worse, given the innovation and the global marketplace we have, I'm actually a much bigger believer today in just being uniquely qualified to doing what you do best and going all in, like we talked about an hour ago, going all in on what you are uniquely qualified to do, and then diversifying and leveraging yourself out amongst people who are way more qualified than you are at those individual things. Because I would rather be everything to someone than nothing to no one.
This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Being able to work remotely is a game changer. You don't have to spend time and money commuting, and often you can work from anywhere in the world. But it does have its downsides. It can be pretty lonely working from home, and if you're off traveling, it can be really hard to find somewhere to sit down and work without a sticky table. That's where WeWork comes in. WeWork is co-working space with offices all over the world. They have everything you need. Fast Wi-Fi, free tea and coffee, and loads of desk space and meeting rooms, so you always have somewhere to get your work done, whether that's alone or with friends and coworkers. And with WeWork On Demand, you can book co-working space by the day and meeting rooms by the hour at locations all around the world. Thanks to our friends at WeWork, you can get 50% off your next co-working space booking. Head to we.co/Brian50, that's BRYAN50, download the WeWork app and enter code BRYAN50, that's Brian50, to get 50% off your next booking. Here we go.
I'm Ryan Serhant, founder and CEO of Serhant and Power Real Estate Broker, located in New York City, and author of Brand It Like Serhant. And you are on Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
That was almost too perfect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, on brand. On brand.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the show. Ryan, welcome. Or Ryan, thank you for having us to your world headquarters.
Yes.
In an undisclosed,
global HQ.
Undisclosed location in Soho.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to miss, actually, when you're here.
There's only a gigantic S in the lobby.
Yes.
Blue.
Yeah, you got to create that attention, man.
Match the brand. We're talking about all things Serhant today.
Thanks.
Congrats on the new book.
Thank you.
I want to understand how Ryan Serhant understands brand. This series is called Behind the Brand. We talk about brand constantly.
Yep.
I've talked to the foremost experts on brand and branding.
Yep.
But I want to hear it from your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What is a brand? Break it down.
Break it down. In my mind, and I had to do this myself because I was very unaware really of what brand was. I think if you ask a lot of people, hey, what's a brand? They're going to point to a drink, some logo, or, you know, their shoes and be like, yeah, I wear those shoes. That's the brand. And what it took me a while to figure out is that probably couldn't be further from the truth. Mm-hmm. Right? Those logos are only there once the brand has already been established. So how do you get to that point? And I meet with so many people, independent contractors, gig workers, creators, and they all think, hey, I need to establish a brand. So let me work on that visual identity. When that is, it's definitely an important step, right? How to structure your Instagram reels, your YouTube show, all that stuff. Those are important steps. I put them all into the book. I mean, it is so tactical. But for me, the simple math is everything starts with your core identity. What do you believe is your value proposition in your core? If we're talking about a personal brand, as a products brand, who is that product? Not what is that product, who is the product?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but kind of going back to the building of a personal brand, it's your core identity. And if you believe everything so strongly in your core, when you go and text people, type emails, go out in person, meet people, everything that leaves your lips is your core identity now out into the world, right? which creates a perception that the world then has of you. Ah, that's what she looks like. That's what he wears. That's how they talk. Oh, that's what they said. Interesting, interesting, interesting. Then you leave the room and that perception becomes reputation. And that reputation, as it ferments, as you do, becomes brand. At that point, with that reputation, you can create visual identity, right? You can create that logo. You can create that consistent content. And, you know, I only think about this so much, maybe because I'm a nerd about it, but also because I had to learn it the wrong way, the hard way. Like, I screwed up so many times thinking I had a brand, but I definitely didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a purple logo. Like, mm-hmm. I had a cool bio, but it was not brand, because there was nothing consistently simple about the awareness that I was creating for myself or for the product. And that foundationally is how I think about brand.
I think you're spot on and you're in good company, because a lot of the smartest people who have talked a lot about brand have said the same exact thing. A brand is a shorthand for what you represent and the experience, right? And oftentimes the brand doesn't really live in us.
Yep.
It lands and lives in the people with whom you have experiences or touch points.
Yep.
So, you know, for better or for worse, that can be your frontline employees. That can be, you know, the people who, you know, this is a touch point, you know, the new book, or could be one of your reps or your, you know, team members out there in the field. If whoever's wearing the Sirhint, you know, badge,
yep,
people have an opportunity to have an impression. And that's what lives inside the hearts and minds of the people. And so, yeah, I love that you took us through that exercise of, you know, talking about values and establishing all that. So that said, what is the Ryan Sirhint brand?
So one of the exercises that I do with people, because a lot of what the book is, isn't just me sitting around thinking about brand. It's the fact that I've been working on my own personal brand and then my company's brand for 15 years. So everything that I've learned in building our brands. And, you know, we started an education business for salespeople based off my first book, which was Selling Like Sirhint in 2018. And we started that business in 2019. And what a lot of people started coming to us for was, yeah, we want to learn how to sell more, but I also want to have a brand. I want to be the one who does X. I want more people to know me, because at the end of the day, you can have the greatest brand ever, but if no one knows what you're selling,
yeah,
you're not going to make any money.
Yeah.
And so how do I generate lead flow, you know, which is what it's all about. How do I create more customers? How do I create more content to create more potential clients? And how do I do that in my sleep, so I don't have to sit there doing outbound lead generation all day? I can have inbound. I want to be stopped on the street, the coffee shop, and I want to wake up with leads in my inbox. And so one of the exercises that we work with people on, which is part of kind of our core identity phase one. And if you go through the book, what I have in there is what I call the Sirhint brand strategy system.
Yep.
And it's separated into three phases, which is core identity, consistent content, and amplification. Kind of what I call like shouting success from the mountaintop. And it's how to do everything. It's literally just a tactical manual. And so in that core identity phase, to answer your question in a long way, there's an exercise called your and, to make things really, really simple, right? So you are, or I am, you asked me about me. I am real estate and what? Like, what is my passion? You've got to have an and. You can't just be real estate. You can't just be cats, right? You can't just be your kids. You can't just be fitness. Like, it's what and what? Where? What is the tactical product that you're connecting yourself to? And then what is that passion that people can emotionally relate to?
All right, let me push back on that a little bit, because I'm curious.
Sure.
Why do I have to have an and? Why can't I just be like, you should ask me what I think the Sirhint brand is.
Oh, well, what do you think the Sirhint brand is?
I see you as the king of real estate East Coast.
Okay.
Full stop.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Is that off? Is that on? Is that accurate?
I'll take that. Thank you. I appreciate it. I think if I'm pitching us though, because like when I started the company, I couldn't just rest on the foundation of I'm the best at real estate on the East Coast, because there's a lot of competition on the East Coast. And so what's my differentiator?
Yeah.
And my differentiator was then media. So we were the first real estate company, I guess, on the East Coast, that then had an in-house production company, like
yes.
separate C Corp, separate everything. So we had studios that for free created organic content for the agents, the properties, and the developers to drive that organic lead flow across a large platform. And so the company was really put out as media and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me personally, right, I am luxury real estate and media as a differentiator.
Yeah.
And if people only see the real estate side, no problem. A lot of people only see the media side.
Well, I guess I'm looking at it from, correct me if I'm wrong. The media side is attractive only to your team. So if I'm an agent and I'm looking for a home,
yeah.
I want to be with Serhant because he's the king of real estate on the East Coast, and he can help me build my personal brand. I can be a sure. protege of yeah. Ryan Serhant and do media like he's done it. I don't think that really applies, you tell me, to clients who want to come, you know, I want to buy a $10 million apartment. I don't yeah. care if you have a media company.
So interesting you say that. You know, there's two types of clients that we work with in the sales space, clients that buy things and clients that sell things.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the buy side, they're appreciative of the media because it can hopefully get us access to more inventory that they wouldn't ordinarily get access to.
Yeah.
But then for us, a lot of times we get access to that buyer through the media because that guy's 12-year-old follows us on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. And says, Dad, if you're going to go get an apartment or a new house, you need to work with Serhant.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the buy side. On the sell side, a lot of our clients now write it into our exclusive contracts that they will get an in-feed Instagram post.
Right.
And they're like, well, if I'm going to go with you guys, then I want to have all the firepower.
Absolutely.
And so we have to figure out posting schedules on our real estate deals now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's part of it and how it works.
Yeah, I love that. So it's an influencer deal, but you're working
kind
from
of
the inside.
It's a house. Yeah. Listen, we are salespeople are part of that gig economy. Mm-hmm. Like I have a lot of conversations during the day. In the last few minutes, did we just talk about census data at all? Or is that another call I just had?
Yeah, another call.
So, okay, Brandon. Sorry, that's my old age. You know, one of the reasons I did all this and started the company, especially going so hard into education, right, which is direct-to-consumer, but also B2B sales training, is 5 years ago, I saw a stat that said 23% of all taxpayers in the United States are gig workers, right? Or record at least a portion of their income and record it in a 1099.
Interesting. Right? So it's like the 80-20 rule. So
today,
yeah,
it's 36%.
Okay.
By 2027, over 50% of the US economy will come in part from gig work, which means that more and more people are rejecting higher education, more and more people are rejecting W-2s and 9-to-5s, and more people are figuring out that they just want to work for maybe 10 people and sell something, whether they know they're in sales or not.
Yeah.
And you know, one of our theses is to really get ahead of that kind of worker industrial revolution
mm-hmm.
that'll come between now and 2030.
So do you see this media company expanding beyond just training agents? Like, is this for other gig economy people?
So studios, so far does, you know, brand deals, agent deals, still relatively real estate. We do some car stuff,
yeah,
random. But sell it. So the education side, yeah, I mean, we have, you know, 22,000 members now in 126 countries. And some of them are surgeons. Some of them are Formula E race car drivers in South Korea.
Yep.
Some of them are selling pianos in Utah to other Mormons. Like,
okay.
A lot of them are real estate, you know, some of them are insurance, mortgage, like it's growing much faster than we anticipated.
So this is like a masterclass style video series that you
kind of, it's more of like a Peloton for sales training.
Okay.
Right. Salesforce for sales training.
On demand, or it's modularized.
Yeah.
Course curriculum.
Yeah.
You learn how to sell.
So it's what you would call, and that's that kind of part of the world. It's, you know, asynchronous. So it's, mm-hmm. hey, go learn how to do this, learn that, you can do whatever you want. And there's also cohort. So you would do it with a live instructor. Oh, so a lot of the B2B stuff is with live instructors. There's assessments, like it's real. And it becomes revenue intelligence for companies outside of just pure product intelligence, where they're like, yeah, I know how to sell the software, but do you? And so we're able to go there and do that. And it's a lot of the same muscle. And, you know, part of our founding is that, listen, we learn how to sell real estate in the streets of New York City, not having been here, not having grown up here, with no leg up, figured out how to do this. I'll help you sell software, you know, and our people will, that we've trained.
It's the same principles. Slightly different music or musicians.
Yeah, talking to someone in person, building your brand is somewhat different than working with like an SDR at a software conglomerate trying to, you know, increase their SQLs. Like there's a very, there's some nuance there, but it's, but it all kind of comes down to, a core understanding of the sales process in the 2020s. You know, and our competitors, there's like two of them globally, and they are, they're built on an economy from the 1990s.
Yeah.
It's different. It's a different world.
I love it. What's the typical misconception or misperception when someone comes in, let's say maybe under your umbrella, wants to build their brand? I mean, I can tell you what happens in our world because, you know, aside from this, I have a production company. We create, you know, film and commercial stuff for clients.
Yes.
And inevitably, we'll get the client that's like, I want to go viral.
Yeah, always.
And it's like,
everyone wants overnight success.
Ugh. Yeah. So talk about some of those, like, okay, here's what you're not going to get, or like, here's the heavy lifting you have to do before you can build your brand. Like, what are some of the building blocks?
Hindsight's 2020, right? As is success, right? You only realize you're successful in hindsight. You don't realize you're successful now. Like, I didn't know that 2018 was like an awesome year for me until it was over.
Yeah.
I didn't know. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time really training them on having a macro vision that's built with like micro wins, right? You have to be as specific as possible.
Yes.
So don't come in and just say, I want a huge brand. I want to go viral. I want to make $1 million. Great. How?
Yeah.
Like literally, what will you do every day? Because you can't control a year and you can't control the dream. What you can control is what you do with the time during the year. And it's funny because, last year, Harvard Business School came to me.
Never heard of them.
And said, we're going to, we'd like to write a case study on you. And I said, are you sure? Like, why? What are you going to write about? Like the company? At that point, we're 2 years old, you know, real estate, TV, what do you want to talk about? Like, no. We're going to write a case study on you and time management. And so they wrote a whole case study and they taught it at Harvard Business School about Ryan Serhant and time management. And I had no idea
how
interesting that was for me.
As I think about it, you are a very punctual guy.
I'm 7 minutes late to this.
Well, but we were in your house. I mean, I remember the last couple of times I've met you, you were like spot on. The other thing I remember, and very quotable from the first interview we did a couple of years ago, is you can't do six crunches and expect six pack abs.
Sure.
Yeah. I love that quote. It still sticks in my mind.
I still like the quote that you put into that article where you compared me. I had the physical prowess of Gronk, who was a tight end, but with none of the athleticism. Like my parents and my brothers, that was the best interview they'd ever read about me. And they still bring that up all the time. Like, man, that guy was the Brian Elliott from it. Dude, that guy just understands you.
I can just cut right through. It's kind of like my thing. I can see through.
Yes.
Great. Anyway, carry on then.
I don't even know what we were just talking
about. Well, you were telling me about the time management. I'm impressed with that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The time management, is key. So Harvard Business School did the case study, which is fun, but it really cut down to how I think about achieving goals, right? And achieving success so that when new agents come in, like you said, or new customers, and they have really, really high expectations, you know, you can walk them through what this process is. So if you want to do something big for the year, no problem. How many minutes a day are you going to put into it?
Yeah.
And if you do that, right, then you can solve a problem literally one day at a time.
I like this. I've heard James Clear talk about it and write about it. James wrote that book, Atomic Habits.
Yep.
That's the whole premise of the book. You know, it's like tiny little wins.
Yeah, of course.
And a lot of people say, don't set your goals huge. Set them like bite-sizable.
Yep.
So that you can just yum, like little Pac-Man and get them, you know, and then you could grow from there. But it's like, start with little micro wins. You're exactly.
Yeah.
It's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's right there. And I've always also thought about time is money. Maybe it's because I'm a commissioned salesperson. Like, I've never had a salary, never had benefits. Like, I just work all the time until someone else is successful. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully maybe I take a small percentage of that.
Yeah.
And so,
do you know what we call it on my side? We call it boats in the water.
Sure.
We have a lot of boats in the water.
Yeah.
They don't always all sail at the same time.
Sure. Yeah.
But you got to have a lot of boats in the water.
Yep. And if you want to really, really be successful, then you burn your boats, right?
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Burn the boats. Yes.
Burn the boats, man. You cut the net. But I created what was like what I called my 1,000-minute rule like 10 years ago because I spent a lot of time, you know, having a bad conversation with someone or getting yelled at by a client or I don't know, like stepping in a pot, like it's something would happen and it would then quote unquote ruin my day. Well, this just ruined my day. Mm-hmm. And it's something, if something really, really bad happens, and in my world, in the sales world, bad things happen on Mondays because people have the weekend to think about it. And then on Mondays, they're like, well, I'm not going to ruin his Sunday, so I'll call him on Monday.
Yeah.
So every Monday is like, what's going to happen today? It would then potentially ruin your week.
Yeah.
But as I started to think about, you know, having 1,440 minutes a day, 1,000 of them I can be productive. If someone ruins 15 of those, I wouldn't throw out $985. So every day I wake up as the CEO of my own bank of time and I go for it. And if I can buy some of that time back, holy moly.
Yeah.
Like the tech that we've built on the brokerage side that we actually announced and showcased for the first time ever at Inman yesterday on stage, was the first time I've ever done that before. Totally terrifying. Does that, you know? And it's really helping people get their time back so they can invest it back into the business or back into having more life.
Yeah. Okay. So in recap, what you're saying is you need to manage expectations or manage your own expectations of being able to, you know, grow to whatever volume you're expecting, like manage those, focus on micro wins and then just start building brick by brick.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah, you're not trying to, your goal isn't to grow muscle. Your goal is to pick up a heavier weight next week, more times than this week. Mm-hmm. That is something I can control, right? As well as what you eat and what you don't eat. Same thing like what you do, you know, with your time and how you put that out there. So you want to build something viral. You're not going to do it once, right? You're going to do consistent content. So in the book, we go through core identity. Once you have that, then you build out consistent content. And then once you have that, you have to be your greatest champion. Mm-hmm. No one's going to talk about your successes if you don't talk about your successes.
I love that Snoop Dogg speech. Have you heard it? I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
It's the Snoop Dogg Hollywood Walk of Fame speech where he's thanking everyone. And he famously says, I want to thank me for all the hard work I put in. I want to thank me for believing in me when everyone else didn't.
Yep.
I want to thank me.
You know what?
For never giving up.
Yeah. You know, the speech that actually had real influence on me, that I think a lot of people made fun of, was Matthew McConaughey's Oscar speech for Dallas Buyers Club, where he got up there and everyone was like, oh, Matthew McConaughey's crazy. But he got up there and he thanked himself in the future.
Yes.
Right? And his role model is him in the future. And I remember watching that all those years ago, and it had a profound impact on how I think about who I work for. Mm-hmm. You know? And then I went on one of those face apps and I aged myself to like 80, old man Ryan, and that guy's my boss because I will be that guy before I know it.
Yeah.
Like I'm almost, you know, I don't know. I moved to New York City yesterday, but that was now almost 20 years ago. And now my back hurts and I'm like, shit. Like, okay. In the amount of time I've now been in New York City, if I don't. Okay, so I'm going to be 60 now before I know it. In the same blink of an eye it's been since the day I got here, it'll be an even faster blink of an eye before I turn 60 years old.
Yeah.
And so I want that guy's life to be great. Everything I do today is for me in the future. You know, future me, that guy, and Matthew McConaughey probably.
Yeah, I'll build on that idea. That's like one of my favorite shows, The Office. That's the very end scene where They say, I think it was Andy who says, I wish I would have known that I was in the good old days.
Yeah.
When I was in the good old days.
Yeah.
Like, we're in them right now.
Yep.
And like, the irony is, yeah. And the irony is, Ryan, like, if you and I are not here right now in the present, all in, and like, given everything we got to this podcast right now, it's like, it's a waste.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I approach, you know, if you're talking about brand or if I talk about, you know, making good use of time, it's like every single opportunity we have to be present with whoever we want to be present with, could be our family, could be client, could be friends, you know, whatever. It's like we have that chance. And if we miss it, we miss it.
Yeah.
And that's, it's now behind us.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Same thing. Like I think about a lot, you know, 10 years from today, you're going to wish you felt this tired.
Right.
Right. You're going to wish your little back pain that you had today.
Remember when I had hair? Oh man, that was so great.
And it's before you're like, you're going to, you know, I talk about it to my wife all the time. Like we look at photos of ourselves getting married and we're like, oh God, we were so young. But I distinctly remember being there and being like, oh man, we're getting married so old. You know, it's all relative. You just, and it's hard. That's a hard thing to teach. I think you just have to, just go out there and have as many experiences as you possibly can and just know that the future is creeping up on you.
Yeah. Back to brand. So what do people get wrong about brand? What if they're not walking the talk? I mean, I'm looking at some of these chapters, you know, like, walk me through some of that.
Yeah. There's a lot of, things to not do. Yeah, no, I know what they are. Going back to what I said originally, like I would say that the biggest thing, people make mistakes with is really not understanding what a brand is in the first place and thinking that it's purely something visual, right? Thinking that it's purely something visual. On the product side, okay, what I really, really love, and I learned this from a lot of different people, and I also interview a lot of people in the books. The first book I've ever done that before.
How was that?
I took a page from your book.
It's fun, right?
It was interesting, man. Like I'd never, you know, because my first two books, this is all part of like a selling trilogy. So Sell Like Sirhan is the sales tools. Big Money Energy is the confidence to use those tools. And then Brand It Like Sirhan is, well, you can't sell anything if no one knows what you're selling. Mm-hmm. So put that all together. Build a great sales career in whatever you want to sell. But in this one, I thought, you know what? I can't write a great brand manual if I don't like talk to other people, you know, from all the classics, from like Gary Vaynerchuk to also, you know, Nick Sharma from Sharma Brands, who's just a genius at this stuff, to Kenneth Cole, you know, talk about, you know, how do you build a socially aware brand and everybody in between. Because I wanted to talk to people that had actually done the work, not people who just have big brands and it just sort of happened.
Did you learn something new?
Yeah. So as far as product goes, you know, because some people don't want to have personal brands. That's fine. Their personal brand can be defined by the success of a product.
Right.
You know, they're building a whatever that product might be.
Yeah.
And so he, and we really go into it in the book and kind of dove in on what he said. It's like one of the exercises we do with our companies is with brands, every brand is a who, not a what. Mm-hmm. Kind of like we said. So we go, okay, this brand, who is she? What does she look like? Okay. You want to sell a new brand of hammers. Is that hammer Martha? Yeah. There's a Tom.
You create a muse.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you build out that whole character study.
Call it persona
out,
sometimes.
Yeah. You build out that persona, that character. Now with AI, you can actually kind of do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And your brand can now have an identity, can have a persona, can have a voice. And most people just don't do that at all. Like at all. I think in part because they just don't want to do the work or they don't know. They haven't done the clarity. The other mistake a lot of people make is they believe in what they've already internalized. So I think I'm awesome.
Right.
I'm the greatest salesperson of all time.
I am the king.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Without actually like doing the survey. So
another exercise that
we'll do is you go find a handful of people or one person that you believe will be completely honest with you and say, please define me without using my name and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this a long time ago to my friend Alex, who's kind of a dick, but I appreciate it.
Honest.
He's honest. Okay. I was like, can you define me without using my name? He's like, what do you mean? I'm just like, how would you explain me to somebody else? If you were going to say, hey, I was just with the guy without using my name, how would you say it? He's like, yeah, you're kind of like the tall, lanky, awkwardly gray hair guy who thinks he's funny sometimes, but most of the time isn't. And you look at the ground when you walk. Hmm. And I was like, ew, gross. Okay. Thanks so much. That's it. That's all you would say. He's like, I don't know. He's nice. I'm like, okay, that doesn't help me. And I kind of learned from that to take the best and leave the rest. You know, like I had dyed my hair, but I didn't realize. And I started asking a lot of people, like I can't see my hair when I'm walking around, you know, and you get so used to it.
Yeah.
And so it's a visual identity and a moniker that people like really connect me to.
Interesting though. He didn't use many adjectives. He didn't say like, you know,
no.
Smart, funny,
people are
thoughtful.
Visual. Oh, he said not as funny as I thought it was. Yeah. Looking at the ground was a weird thing. I was like, really? That's how he's like, yeah, you're the guy that does that. I'm like, I'm the guy who looks at the ground when I walk. It's like, yeah, everyone says that. I'm like, what? I didn't even know that.
Everyone does. Yeah. Go to the YouTube comments. Yeah. Come on.
What? Yeah. And so I did like a little bit of internal discovery. It was like, why do I do that? And I dug back and I dug deep. And what it was when I was growing up, I had really, really bad skin. So I had rash acne. And I would get embarrassed looking at people in the eye because their eyes would move around my face. Mm. And so it was easier for me to walk between classes in high school and college without making eye contact. So I would just walk with my eyes at the ground. And even when my skin cleared up and I got older, I never actually broke that muscle memory because it just became like the way I walk.
Yeah, old habits. Yeah.
But it set a perception.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
As part of my brand math that the world then had of me as somebody who was unconfident. Someone who then also was potentially ignorant. Someone who didn't want to make eye contact with me because I don't have acne anymore. So people are like, oh, that guy's not making eye contact with me. That guy's a jerk. And I had no idea.
Yeah. Very smart. I mean, we're talking about sort of nonverbal cues, interpretations. That's relatable. Oftentimes people will come up to me and say, are you okay? Are you upset? I have that RBF face sometimes. I'm in my head a lot.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, being conscious of nonverbal cues is really important to your brand. Sometimes you're communicating the wrong thing. But, you know, like sometimes I'm really in my head. I'm very introverted, actually, Ryan.
Yeah.
Even though I, you know, turn the lights on and I'm like, you know, fire plug. But it's like,
you're like me. In front of the lights, we are on. Lights off, I'm looking at the ground.
Yes. okay.
It's, you know, it's funny. The only movie I ever made was While We're Young. It's Noah Baumbach directed it with Ben Stiller and Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried and Naomi Watts and stuff. And I'd never been around people like that. And they cast me as a guy named Hedge Fund Dave. and you should watch it. It's funny. And he, but anyway, so I had all these scenes with Ben. And I, you know, I grew up watching Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
And Ben's loud. He's funny all the time. When the camera's on, when the camera's off.
Yes.
He is silent.
He's pretty quiet.
He's super quiet.
Yeah.
Like in a corner.
I know.
It was a wild experience for me.
He got upset with me, actually. When I was at Universal, I worked with him on Meet the Parents.
Oh, really?
That movie with De Niro.
Yeah. Oh, I know it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I came in all hot. You know, I was excited to meet him because I thought he was funny and I was joshing around with him funny and he just looked super deadpan and he didn't really answer me. And then his agent says, let's not talk to Mr. Stiller like that anymore. You know, like
what was your role? What was your job then?
I was on the brand strategy team helping with, the DVD, after the movie came out theatrical and we had showed him this key art, which is the cover of the art. And maybe had slightly in part to do that. We had him a comp done like this bunny. Like, you ever see a Christmas Story?
Yeah.
Where the kid comes out in the bunny suit. So we put him in a bunny suit.
Oh, good job.
And I was like, this is hilarious. And he goes, no answer. I was like, oh, I guess he doesn't like it.
Did you use that?
No. The agent said, you know, he's really trying to lean more into leading man role.
Yeah,
so we ended up putting bunny slippers on him in the comp. And that's what made the cut. But no, I get it. You got to be careful.
DVDs. Wow.
Got to be careful. So let's go back to what you learned from all of these experts. You talked to all these people who are running brands.
Yep.
What was one of the key takeaways?
Oh, man. There was so many. I would say, you know, there's an amazing woman who runs a company called August, which is like period awareness.
Okay. Yep.
And period power, and really kind of taking away any shame or embarrassment from periods, because half the world has them.
Of course.
So she was so like, I would have, in my interview with her, I could have stayed on there for 12 hours. She never would have done that because she's way too busy building a rock star company. But she talked a significant amount about the creation of community and community awareness in brand building, and how it's not, you know, because the kind of phrase content to commerce has been used for a long, long, long time. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, yeah, we can create content that's funny. We can create, you know, brand aware content about period, you know, tampons and pads and everything. And then people will look at the content and they'll say, ha, 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 and maybe they'll buy it, right? Buy it. But given what you can do now on TikTok and Snap and across stories, right? Every brand, even if it's tampons, is a character, right? It's a person. And that person needs to, and your customer has to connect with it. And you do it through community. So that math that I talked to you about of, it's no longer content to commerce. It's content to community commerce. Was really, really eye opening. And that whole interview, you know, I really didn't edit a whole lot from it, and is in the book, because I thought it was super, super, super smart. She had a great way of really kind of building community awareness to create brand attention to the benefit of a booming business in a marketplace that I don't think a whole lot of people would say, hey, let's go disrupt feminine products, you know?
Yeah.
And she has. It was super cool.
It's smart. I mean, disruption is the key, right? You're trying to differentiate yourself from all the other real estate agents.
Yeah.
You're a real estate agent and a media company. I think about other, like Liquid Death is one of my favorites right now, disrupting water. It's like, I remember when Stance did it with socks and Liquid Death doing it with water. It's like,
It's cool.
Where do you see white space? Like, where's the Sirhan brand lasering focus now?
I still think there's a lot, and we're working on some things. I still think that real estate is relatively pretty boring. Like, the houses are cool, but no one has done for real estate sales what Liquid Death has done for water, or Logan and KSI have done for drinks, you know. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do there. I think there's white space there. I think there's white space in furniture. I think Restoration Hardware is beautiful. I think it's super cool. I think it's super expensive. Mm-hmm. I think IKEA has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a mass market changing of the guard that should be taken. And I don't think anyone is, as far as I know, I'm sure there are people trying. So I apologize to anyone who's trying. I just haven't seen it yet personally. I think there's a huge, huge marketplace, because all I know is, all people did over the last couple of years is move and buy houses, and there is no furniture. Can't get it.
Sirhan Home Furnishings.
Yeah. Yeah. Sirhan Sleep. Sirhan Sofa.
Hey, listen, Ralph Lauren did it.
Yeah.
Why not Ryan Sirhan?
Sure. Oh my God. One thing at a time.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good white space where you could do a lot. And people have dabbled in furniture, and it's always hard, but it's because they tried to do too much. Like, you've got to start simple. Right. Like, if you look at Liquid Death, it's one can, looks the same, it's water. Mm-hmm. If you look at Prime, right, they start with the one drink, right? If you look at anything else, they start with the one thing.
What would you start with? Would it be a sofa? Would it be a bed?
Because I think I wouldn't want to compete right away with mattress companies.
Right.
Or like bedding companies. Like, I don't need to go to battle with Casper or
Serta
or like Brooklinen or any of those. I think I think, like, there should be like the table and chairs.
Yeah. Stickley and some of those old, like, they're 100-year-old brands. Yeah. These guys are like.
Yes.
I mean, if you're not into furniture, you don't know what Stickley is. But sure. It's like, would you reinvent that category? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think there's a huge, huge marketplace for it. But I'm very much on the mass market side of the business.
Okay.
You know, I think they're
You wouldn't go high end luxury, you'd go mass.
I don't think so. I like doing things for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. On the real estate side, you know, me personally, I only operate in the luxury space.
Yeah.
There's only so much time. But the firm, I mean, we sell everything, you know, at all price points in all markets.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta be in like South Carolina on Friday. I think we have like a national home builder, you know, selling track land lots. And then that Saturday, I got to be in Savannah. You know, these are relatively normal markets.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's all, listen, it's all volume at the end of the day.
Let's wrap things up by maybe leaving some words of wisdom, some pieces of advice.
Yeah.
People building their brand. Pull it right from the pages of the book.
I did not need to write a book, right? I didn't need to write the first two. But I had such a deep itch to put this out there. And it really completes that flywheel for me, you know, after the first two books. And they're all the same. I mean, they're all me. So they all operate together. But I am just so excited about all the opportunities that people have today to build something for themselves. Even 5 years ago, right? It was so much harder then to create something new compared to what it is today.
Let me ask you about that too. It's like, what is simply like a deeply held belief you had 5 years ago about business or about yourself or, you know, that category that you no longer believe? Things have changed.
5 years ago, well, that's a loaded question. 5 years ago, I believed you had to be a jack of all trades if you wanted to be successful. You had to understand all the individual pieces of the widget, right? You had to know everything about something and something about everything. Mm-hmm. And I still think that's fine. Today, given the advancements in technology, given the efficiencies that have now been created through AI, which have reduced, you know, engineer and legal workforces for the better or worse, given the innovation and the global marketplace we have, I'm actually a much bigger believer today in just being uniquely qualified to doing what you do best and going all in, like we talked about an hour ago, going all in on what you are uniquely qualified to do. And then diversifying and leveraging yourself out amongst people who are way more qualified than you are at those individual things. Because I would rather be everything to someone than nothing to no one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up. Reminiscing about the good old days and all that. You know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going.